You're listening to a podcast made the Johnsonville way.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another riveting episode of Off the Clock, a podcast made the Johnsonville way. I am Joe Horsemeyer, and to my right, I have...
Jeffrey Verhelst.
Jeff, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Joe?
I'm good. Are you excited about this episode?
I'm really actually excited about this. I'm glad it turned out that I don't have to
really
run the board for this.
Really actually excited, as if you're not excited for
I'm
the
actually
other ones?
Disappointed we didn't get to go to Darren's house and play before we did this.
Wait. We haven't got to our guest.
Sorry.
You can't drop that name.
Sorry. Okay. They should have seen it when they clicked on the link.
Fair. Okay, well, anyway, since you brought the cat out of the bag,
yeah.
Who do we have with us?
Darren Poisson.
That's really funny.
Now that we got all those names out of the way, Darren Poisson, welcome to Off the Clock.
Thank you very
How are
much.
You today?
I am good, yeah.
Good. So, Jeff, were you saying something before when I cut you off to bring Darren on officially?
No.
Okay, good. Anyways, let's talk to Darren. So, Darren...
No.
We're on fire today. Yeah. Darren, we'd like to get these episodes started with a little bit of your Johnsonville story. So, when did you start? What have you done? You know, the shebang.
Sure. So, my journey at Johnsonville started in 2007.
Okay.
I spent 20 years in the Navy. Retired from the Navy, wanted to come back here to be near my family. My sister and her kids and her husband live in Elkhart Lake.
Oh, great.
And when I got out of the military, 2006, there was not a whole lot of jobs out there.
Yeah.
And what I discovered really quickly is that the skills that I had in the Navy, you know, finding submarines.
You can't do that around
yeah.
here.
Wait a minute. Really not super effective.
There's none in Lake Michigan, you tell
yeah,
me?
No. Not that I'm aware of, anyway.
So you looked for submarines?
I did. That was my whole time in the Navy. Yeah.
That's amazing. I've never met anybody like that.
That was looking for submarines, I'm pretty
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of us. Yeah.
It's an exclusive
that's,
club.
That's we really cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We didn't find a lot of them. Just saying.
It was a great 20 years. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, had a great time.
Somebody once asked me how hard it is to find a submarine. I said, go in your bathtub, fill up the bathtub with water, turn on a flashlight, throw it in the water, and then turn the lights off, close your eyes, and try to listen for it. That's basically what trying to find a submarine is all about.
Wow.
Stuff.
That's really funny.
How many did you actually find?
Oh, probably in the hundreds.
Oh, okay.
That's
yeah.
So you actually did something.
Wow. Yeah, we That's did. Good. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, retired in 2006, and I was looking for work and couldn't find anything, and ended up going to a big job conference. I did 8 interviews in one day down at a hotel in Chicago.
Wow.
And got picked up by Rockwell Automation out in Richland Center as a supervisor. Mm-hmm. Did that for about a year. Mm-hmm. Had 7 or 8 departments working for me, about 40 or 50 people.
Sure.
And still was too far. My mom, I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. My mom was still living up there.
Oh.
And that up was about
there,
a... Yeah. Take off. That was about a 6-hour drive from Richland Center. And I was going up there every weekend to see my mom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that got to be too much. So I started looking here. And it's an interesting story. I put in an application for Johnsonville for a APC role.
Okay.
And they said, well, you know, we don't think you're ready for the APC role, but we've got this second shift team leader opening.
That's right.
And I was like, oh, cool. Mm. So I was driving here for my last interview, and I had just left Richland Center. I was maybe 10 minutes out of town, and I got stuck behind the semi truck, and I followed the truck all the way here. It was actually the Big Taste Grill that I followed from Richland Center. All they
that's
pulled right
hilarious.
Into Johnsonville. I'm like, dude, that's karma.
Wow.
Right? So I interviewed, and they offered me the position. So I started out on second shift new line.
Oh, okay.
Here at Countryside, and did that for not very long.
Okay.
Really. And then this was kind of the time when things were transitioning a little bit in a learning coordinator role.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Siegel had moved to production. So she was team lead / APC at that time.
Okay.
And the learning coordinator position opened up, and I had done some training when I was in the military. I spent about 3 years doing training. Really loved it. Had a great time. I love seeing that light bulb go on in people's eyes when they get it. And I thought this learning coordinator thing is a great entry into that kind of role. So I was a little uncomfortable about putting in for it. You know, I had been here for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I went to, at that time, the APC was Vance Belter, and John Schwantes had just started.
Oh, wow.
And I went to both Vance and John, and I said, you know, I feel really uncomfortable about putting in for this. You hired me to be a team lead. I'm sure there's an expectation that I'm in that role for a while. And both of them said, if you're interested in it, go for it. That's the Johnsonville way.
Wow.
And that was my instant buy-in to the culture here.
Yeah, sure.
So, went from the team lead position to the learning coordinator position. And then I did that for, I guess, 5 years, 4 years. And we implemented the learning management system. And they realized really quickly they needed somebody to manage that.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a closet propeller head. You know, I've got that little hat with the spinner on the top of
it. You were looking for submarines.
And just to clarify, learning management system is LMS for those of you listening that probably know it as that more than the other name. Yeah.
So they needed somebody to run that thing. So I went over and was part of the implementation team and learned how to run it. And that became my primary role, which now I find that I do about 20% of the time. And I actually do a lot more facilitation, administrative stuff, working with different teams.
Wow.
So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah, and you've taught, like you said, facilitating. You've taught a couple different classes, I mean, that I've been in myself.
Yeah.
So what are all the classes you do teach?
So
if you can list them all.
I facilitate the Johnsonville Way, Connecting with Respect, Crucial Conversations, most of the BLAST content.
Sure.
So Inside Out Coaching and other content associated with BLAST class, cash flow. I usually do some banking in cash flow and then do a little bit of a finance portion. So, yeah, I'm involved in a number of classes.
Yeah, I'd say. That is great.
Yeah.
So everything you have done so far has obviously helped and touched the lives of many Johnsonville members. So thank you, first off, for your time and what little time, actually. I mean, let's think about that and then, you know, where you are today. But let's get on to what you do when you're not facilitating classes.
Yeah, it's not a very big list
of things you do outside.
I don't know. I feel like it might not be a big list, but it's
The things you do are
big. So what do you got? What are they?
So I was thinking about this when you guys asked me to come and be on Off the Clock. Yeah. And I started thinking about where I'm at with regards to a lot of the hobbies that I do when I'm not at work. And the way I think about it is you've got kind of three levels of people that get into stuff. You have people that don't get into it at all, right? There are people that have absolutely no interest in sports.
Sure.
And then there are people that are kind of on the fringe of sports. They watch the games on Sundays, but they don't get into fantasy football and all that stuff. And then you've got the people that are deep.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. That it's their entire life. That's all they do.
Sure.
And it's the same for fishing and hunting and many other things. So I think with most of my hobbies, I'm on that fringe.
Oh.
I'm not super deep into any of them. And my hobbies change a lot.
Oh.
You know, I played softball when I was in San Diego because softball was the thing in San Diego.
Okay.
And I was playing 4 or 5 days a week. I was playing on tournament teams. We were going all over the place. When I lived in Virginia, fishing was huge. So I used to go bass fishing and saltwater fishing, and I got into that.
Wow.
But I haven't fished since I've been here because fishing here is totally different, right? You got to have a boat.
Yeah,
it's just a nuisance.
Or ice fishing.
Or ice fishing, not me, thanks. I'm built like a polar bear, but I don't necessarily want to stand outside this in the snow.
You get a tiny little shack with a heater, you'll be fine.
So the things that I really got into when I was here were really centered around getting to know people and family.
Okay.
So for my family, my sister, her kids, her husband, and my mom all live in the area. So my sister lives in Elkhart. My mom lives in Keele with me.
Mm-hmm.
Not with me, but in town.
Sure.
With me. And
thank distinct clarification.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. I think I would probably go nuts if my mom lived with me.
Love you, mom.
Yeah, love the moms. Just can't live with them.
She doesn't have a computer. She'll never.
Okay.
I'm going to send it to her.
Nice.
You're welcome.
And so one of the things that we always do, I mean, we go to my mom's house for breakfast on Sunday mornings. So anytime that we do something as a family, there's usually food involved.
That's good.
As with most
yes,
families.
Yes, that's yeah. great.
And I've been into barbecue for a long time. I barbecued for Cindy's grandparents a turkey for Thanksgiving one year. Accidentally left the giblet packet inside.
Oh, no.
So that was embarrassing. The food was great. Yeah. It was just kind of embarrassing to pull that giblet packet out of the middle of the turkey.
What do you do?
I've done whole hogs. For my teams, when I was in the military, I would, you know, have events on Saturdays, and my guys would come over, and we'd have pig roast and stuff like that.
Wow.
So as kind of an evolution of that, I got really disappointed in some of the sauces, the barbecue sauces on the market. So I started doing some research on the internet, and I started putting together my own flavors.
Wow.
So I've actually got five or six pretty distinct flavors of barbecue sauce that I make. I'll give them away for Christmas gifts and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So you bottle them up and all that kind of stuff?
I do, yeah.
Looks well professional?
Well, it doesn't really look that professional.
Sure, but I mean, yeah. It's really cool, though. That it's not like something you put in a Tupperware container and you put off to the side. It's something that you actually, you know, put a little work into.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. How do you get started on something like that? How do you know where to start? You know, I mean, I know what barbecue should taste like, but I wouldn't know how to make it.
Google is a wonderful thing.
Google.
That's generally where I start.
Okay.
And I'll find a recipe online, and I'll pull it down, and I'll start looking at it, and I'll tweak it.
Oh.
I'll add this spice, or I'll take that spice out, or some of my most creative stuff happens when I go into the cabinet, and I don't have something the recipe calls for.
Wow.
And I go, how can I replace that?
Yeah.
And I just start winging it.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that any of my sauces turn out the same every single time I make them.
Okay.
Because I'm always changing it up.
Wow.
So
what are the base ingredients then? I'm guessing like for some of it's ketchup, vinegar.
Yep. Ketchup, vinegar, molasses,
okay.
Brown sugar is the base for the majority of my sauces.
Sure.
I do make a mustard based one.
Okay.
That has some stout beer in it some mustard.
Oh.
And then I make an exotic one that has, like, apricot jam in it and some other stuff.
Interesting.
I use habanero in that one, so it's a little, it's
sweet,
got some kick
spicy.
To it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you said you have how many?
I think six.
Six? Okay.
Six unique flavors.
So when you come up with these, are you just sitting in your kitchen and you enjoy them yourself, or do you bring people over and you're like, oh, try this out? Or?
I do not enjoy them myself.
Oh.
I absolutely bring them to work, okay. or
oh,
I have
good,
people
good.
Come over, yeah.
Sure.
My team has experienced some of the different flavors of my sauces, and
wow.
you know, I get requests for them.
Mm-hmm. So awesome. Now what do they taste better on, chicken or pork or... Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Depends.
Yeah.
For those of you out there, he looks at me, his eyes get real big, like,
Yeah.
All of those. Yeah.
Some of them are better on chicken than they are on pork. My wife doesn't eat beef.
Okay.
So I don't cook beef. So I've not really tried much of this on beef, but
sure,
chicken and
sure.
pork for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now what inspires you to make another one? Another flavor, or is it just kind of like you're done with the five or six, or you just and then there's a one-off every once in a while, or how's it work then?
Yeah, usually it's theme based. Like if we have a potluck,
okay,
people will start thinking about different themes of the potluck, and I'll want to do something different.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I'll just start looking on the internet, trying to find something unusual. Maybe I'll pick an ingredient. Maybe I want to use, you know, banana peppers as one of the ingredients. So I'll go out and try and find a sauce that has something similar to that, and then adapt off of that.
And then if it's so good, then you maybe try to do it all the time or make it one of your staples. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That is something else. I'm sitting here trying to picture myself making something, and I just feel it would just be terrible. You meld everything together. I mean, how do you...
There's a spoon in a bowl.
Yeah,
you just kind of stir it. Yeah.
That's how you meld things
together. I mean, I hear you say banana peppers, and I'm like, ooh, I would make something with banana peppers, and it would taste like banana peppers. Like, I would totally biff that. You know, but that's just amazing that you're able to
just puree it and then kind of introduce
absolutely.
It into this.
Yep. There's a base for pretty much all the sauces, and that base is usually ketchup, molasses and a little bit of vinegar.
Okay.
And once you got that base, you could pretty much do anything you want with it.
I see. Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, maybe we should get a recipe and Joe can try to make it.
I don't know. I think we should try Darren's is what I think.
Yeah. The easy route.
Yes.
That I can make happen.
There you go.
That I can make happen.
Oh, right. Boy.
So enough of this.
Okay,
let's get into
all
the
right.
Meat potatoes.
Meat and potatoes.
Is that like a weird pun?
No, that was terrible.
Into like the brisket and ribs of the conversation.
Except for no beef.
Boy. All right, let's move on to the one I really want to talk to you about. And why don't you introduce it? I'll let you be the one.
I see you have notes here.
Yes.
I mean, you have actual paperwork here.
Okay, we should really start. So Darren talks about how he doesn't really get into these kind of things. He's not on the fanatic side of this. But I actually think you might be right on the border leaning into the fanatic side of this.
There's no doubt about that.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Now, it might not be a total like life consuming hobby, but it's for sure close. And I say that because I got an email from Darren a little while back, and it's titled Gaming. And in there has a link to his website or blog, I guess.
Yep, website.
That has a very detailed description of all of his Dungeons & Dragons games that he participates in every Saturday.
Yeah.
And it is detailed. When I say detailed, I was reading through it. I'm like, it's like a story. Like he's writing a book on the website pretty much. So like, how did you get into all this?
What is Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah. So
all those questions.
Yes. It's a fantastic question. I'll start at the beginning, which is where all great stories should start.
Yep. Very good place to start.
I told you guys I grew up in the Upper Peninsula and, there's not a heck of a lot to do up there. So a friend of mine, this was 1980, and,
Stranger Things, ladies and gentlemen,
Stranger Things. Yes. A friend of mine picked up something called the Redbox set, which is one of the original, forms of Dungeons and Dragons. The creator is actually from Wisconsin.
Really?
From, I didn't know that.
His name is Gary Gygax. And they do a convention every year in Lake Geneva, which is where he's from, called GaryCon, which is kind of a convention dedicated to Gary Gygax.
We should totally go.
Yeah.
Joe's laughs, but I'm serious. I'm serious. You got to go.
I've never been.
You could. We could carpool. Let's go.
There you go. It's in March, so we could go.
Perfect time. Let's get a hotel room. Let's go.
I'm really actually on board. I'm game. Yep. I'm just giggling because I didn't think there'd actually be a con of any kind.
There's cons for everything.
There are cons all over the
U.S.
I think
it's cool that it's from Wisconsin, though.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, go ahead. You got the red box.
Yeah, got the red box. And just started, you know, in the red box, you got these little dice that the numbers weren't even colored in, and they gave you a crayon, and you had to color in the numbers yourself with the crayon.
Really?
Yeah, so for me, growing up in the UP, it was not easy. There was a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So that was my opportunity to escape, right? I could go over to Andy's house and pretend to be an elf and fight dragons, right?
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So it was just kind of a break for me, a little bit of an escape. So I played with him for a number of years, just kind of messing around, just the two of us, really. It wasn't even a group. One of us would be one and one would be the other, and we'd just go out and make stuff up.
Huh.
So, Joe, you asked what is Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah.
And for me, Dungeons & Dragons is a collaborative storytelling exercise.
Okay. Wow.
The Dungeon Master or the Game Master, whatever system you're in, D&D is kind of a blanket that they throw over a bunch of different role-playing games as a system. D&D is a unique game in and of itself, but there are hundreds of games that are very similar to D&D. Some of them take place in space. Some of them take place in the Old West. Some of them you're spies, and you're running around Russia trying to find the secret keys and that
really?
Kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. There's tons of genres of role-playing games, D&D being the most famous.
Sure.
So when I was growing up, D&D really had a negative connotation, and still in some ways does today, right? There was the Satanic Panic, and people thought that kids that were getting involved in this were worshiping the devil, and they were going to be druids and kill cows in their backyards and all.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I was going to ask about it.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah. And for some people, it was like that, right? There's nutcases in every single community, right?
Nuh-uh.
So,
nah.
What are you talking about? And Tom Hanks was actually in a television show, or a movie, I'm sorry, that really was centered around D&D. And, yeah, it wasn't a very good
Chris
movie. Chris
is telling me it was a terrible movie.
Yeah,
Chris
it was
is over here like,
hey! She claimed it, though. Towards the end of the movie, he actually went kind of off the deep end and was out in the woods thinking that he was actually his character. And, you know, that helped to drive the negative, you know, social connotation around Dungeons & Dragons.
Huh.
And when did that movie come out? Do we know?
Don't have a clue. It had to be in the late 70s, early 80s. So for a long time, D&D had a horrible reputation because of a lot of that. So when I joined the Navy, I was actually stationed in Hawaii. And
nice.
Yeah, Hawaii was awesome. Nice. But
San Diego, Hawaii, didn't sound like gig in the Navy.
You know what? It was awesome. There's only so much to do.
Okay.
Right? The island is only so big. Yeah. Going to the beach gets kind of lame after a while.
I'm sure, yeah.
Down to Waikiki, check out the tourists, right?
Yeah.
So what ended up happening is I ran into a guy that was a dungeon master, and he was running a game. So
in the Navy
in the Navy. He was on the ship with me.
All right.
And I ended up going over to his house, and we would go once a week, usually on a Saturday, and I'd get there. Well, way too early. I was one of those guests that never leave. He probably couldn't stand me. And his wife would get annoyed, right? I'd show up 3 hours before the game. And
We're ready.
Play the Nintendo a little bit. Yeah. And then we'd game a little bit. And then he'd say, it's time for you to leave, Darren.
That's great.
So I'd get back on the bus and go back to the ship. But it was a group of probably five of us. And we would game pretty much every weekend for 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours.
Wow.
And again, it was just an opportunity to sit around and talk to people and have a good time.
Huh.
And we wouldn't necessarily game for the whole 4 hours. Hmm. We might BS about something. We might run around in the backyard with squirt guns and play with the kids or whatever. So it was kind of just a way to be hanging out with friends.
Huh.
And then when you're at sea, you don't have a lot of options there either.
Yeah.
You know, we got to remember this was well before computers became something that everyone had. Hmm. So nobody was playing, you know, Dragon Age Origins on the ship. They were playing spades and dominoes and stuff on the mess deck. So it was an opportunity to hang out with some people and kind of nerd out a little bit.
Huh. So I want to come back around, obviously, but is World of Warcraft, is that kind of along the same lines as Dungeons and Dragons, or is that completely different?
It's completely different.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
It's
just checking. Because I know people have completely like lost their jobs and other things, you know, while playing that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think World of Warcraft's much more of like it's always online and always on. Mm. So you're pulled into it all the time. Like, you feel like you always have to be on it.
Okay.
Whereas Dungeons and Dragons, you can play it, the game ends, you can, you know, kind of move on and maybe start it up at another time. You know, it starts and stops as you want.
Okay.
Versus the other one's more of like for everybody in the entire world, not just the people you're with.
Wow.
Yeah. And 80 to 90% of World of Warcraft is combat, right?
Sure,
oh, sure.
Go out and kill this thing and grab their stuff and put it in your bag and then go make something out of it.
Oh.
And the way that I play D&D isn't like that at all.
Okay.
We could have a full 4 hour session and never fight anything.
Wow.
It's all just role playing, right? Huh. It's an opportunity to tell stories.
So my only experience with Dungeons and Dragons is from Stranger Things.
Sure.
Okay. I have to admit. So, break down the game. Someone actually creates the outline, and then the characters within that work within that outline?
Yeah, that's absolutely what happens.
Okay.
There's a couple of ways you can do it. There's a lot of pre-generated stuff where you can just go out and grab an adventure and run it,
okay.
And everything's built for you.
Wow.
I do that sometimes. More often than not, I do what's called a sandbox or an open world, where people come in, they create a character, and I develop a story around their character.
Oh, wow.
So currently I've just put together Jeff, you saw it, The World of Contention.
Yeah.
There's
I just read the last two you did with Meepo or something.
Yeah,
like
Meepo.
That.
Yeah, that's a classic canned adventure that I'm actually running for the group just to kind of get them into it.
I just read the last two you did, yeah.
Yeah. We've got a lot of new people that haven't played before in that group, so it's an opportunity.
So this is online now, huh?
You can play it online or you can play it in person. So my Saturday night game at home is in person. I've got people that come to my house. Sunday nights, I actually get online with a program called Fantasy Grounds.
Okay.
And I've got friends that I met online playing Dungeons & Dragons. One lives in Florida. One lives in Philadelphia. I got a guy that lives in California and two guys that live up in Canada.
Oh, wow.
And we try to game as much as we can.
Yeah.
I've actually made trips down to Florida.
Well, that's awesome.
Howard came from Philly and met me down there.
Really?
The three of us hung out. I rented a condo on the beach and we played D&D a day. And
so cool.
It was
so cool.
Sign me up.
So cool.
And awesome. For me, you guys might know, I'm kind of a hermit, a little bit of an introvert.
Sure.
Okay.
And reaching out to do this kind of stuff is a stretch for me.
Huh.
So it's been interesting.
Now, what is my question? What does your wife think of all this? Is she totally into it? Does she play ever with you? Or is she just like, you know what? You just have this, and I'm going to leave you alone, and just then you're okay with it. She's good with it?
Yeah, I think the last.
Okay.
She doesn't get involved. Sometimes we'll play a board game together or something, but she's not into the whole D&D thing. Actually, it's interesting because her dad was not very happy with the fact that I played D&D when we first met.
Really?
Wow.
Actually, this Saturday is our 28th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. But he is a very strong Christian roots. And when we started dating, he was like, you play this devil worship game?
Oh, no.
And so I tried to explain
and
it to
like,
him.
You're like, yes, I do.
And he totally didn't understand me.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
So I said, hey, Gary, do you you ever play Monopoly? Yeah, I love playing Monopoly. I said, so when you're playing Monopoly, what are you doing? Well, you're pretending to be a real estate investor and you're buying property and you're trying to make money. I said, D&D is the same thing. I'm not pretending to be a real estate investor. I'm pretending to be, you know, a human barbarian with a sword and I'm fighting monsters. It's different.
Sure.
But it's kind of the same thing. I'm pretending to be something different. And when I put the game away, I'm not a barbarian with a sword.
Sure.
I'm back to being Darren again, just like you're not a property investor when Monopoly goes back in the box.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think once he understood that that separation happens, that you can turn that on and then turn it back off again, he was a lot better with it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it is just like any other game. I mean, it's an escape. You play it for a reason, so you know you can remove yourself from whatever you're doing.
I always think of, like, I play Skyrim. Which is essentially, it's just a video game version of Dungeons & Dragons. You create a character and you walk around the open world, literally doing whatever you want. And again, you can go through the whole game and fight, or you can just go through and meet people and do their quests and whatever. So, I mean, it's, I don't want to say primitive, but it's the very early version of that.
Wow.
And same with, you said, Dragon Age Inquisition.
Oh, yep.
Witcher's this kind of the same idea. It's just the same way, just in a paper box, I guess.
Yeah. What I find amazing about Dungeons & Dragons, especially in the last 5 years or so, there's been kind of a renaissance. So they've gone through, we're on fifth edition right now of D&D. So there was original box set and then first edition, which was Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, which when they first came out with the hardcover books and you really had to math a little bit.
Wow.
There is math involved, so there is learning and development involved in the whole process of actually playing D&D.
Well, I was going to play it, but now I don't know.
Well, Darren will do all the hard work for you. It's okay.
So they've worked up through 5th edition. And 4th edition was super, gamers call it crunchy, right? Crunchy means there's a lot of numbers, there's a lot of figuring, there's a lot of formulas to figure out what's going on. When they came out with 5th edition, they removed 90% of the crunch.
Wow.
And it's super easy to play. You just pick up the books, you write down what you want to be, and as far as running the game, being the DM, it's super simple because I have all the decision-making capability in the world. You want to do something cool? Roll some dice. We'll see if it's possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
And before, there was books for everything. So you had to flip to this chart on this page and cross-reference strength and depth and all this other things.
Oh, my
God. It was kind of crazy. And it's really loosened up now.
Okay.
And what's happened is there's been a lot of celebrities that have really gotten involved in D&D. Vin Diesel.
Of all the celebrities.
Last person I expect to come out of your mouth.
Yeah. Drew Barrymore.
Wow.
Also okay. big into D&D. And there's also been a lot of work done on a lot of these social network and streaming, like Twitch.
Okay.
There's a group of voice actors that plays a game. It's called Critical Role.
I've actually watched them play. One of the other podcasts I listened to went with them, and that was my introduction. And like they're like they actually like voice these characters, and they're like pretending to be an orc, and they pretend to have the voice. And it's really like super interactive.
Really,
it's really cool. Go ahead.
It's actually really amazing. One of the things that I do when I set my games up is say that I am not Matt Mercer, and Matt Mercer is the guy that runs that Critical Role, and he's an amazing voice actor. And everybody on that panel that plays that game are all fantastic voice actors. Ashley Johnson was on Growing Pains. She was the little girl on Growing Pains, and now she's on Blind Spot.
Really?
So if you watched either of those two shows, she's on Critical Role. There's a couple other games, the cool thing about gaming is it really pulls groups in that you wouldn't expect. Women in gaming has been a huge thing lately, right? Women in video games, women voiceover actresses don't get the same money that male voice actresses get. But there's a DM called Satine Phoenix that has an online game, and she just rocks it. And it's amazing what they're pulling into the communities of gaming and how they're exposing social things that are happening in the world today with their games.
Yeah. Wow. Now, I do go on Twitch, not as much as I do YouTube, but like the video games I do play, you're constantly like trying to either figure out a spot that you're stuck in, you want to watch somebody, or to get better at the game, I'm watching stuff, this is how you do that, you know, and stuff like that. But do you find yourself going online, watching those kind of things to get better as a DM, GM, whatever you want to call yourself?
Yeah,
I don't like saying GM because I think a general manager, like a sports reference. But was it game manager?
Game master
or dungeon master. Do you find yourself doing that and kind of picking up tips from other people?
100%. I spend a lot of my time watching other guys and gals DM and run games. Okay. Satine is great. Matt Mercer is great. Mike Merles is one of the creators of D&D. He's fantastic. There's a group out there called Acquisitions Inc. They play at a lot of the cons. And one of my other favorite authors, Patrick Rothfuss, is part of that group, and he plays. It's an amazing community, and I learn so much every time I watch one of those podcasts or one of those videos.
Wow. And so now the guys you play with now, or guys and gals maybe, how did you get introduced to them? Or is it online through?
Yeah, so my online game was Fantasy Grounds has a forum that you can go out and like search for groups.
Oh, okay.
And there was a group posted. I joined it, and we just started to build a bond. We've been playing together for probably 12 years now.
Oh, wow.
My in-person game, I go out on meetup.com, and I created a meetup on meetup.com.
Sure.
And honestly, I didn't expect to find anybody locally that was interested in playing. And I got 8 or 9 people first day I put the meetup up.
Wow, that's awesome. So
two of them come from Fond du Lac. It's a husband and wife group that come from Fond du Lac. There's a kid that comes from a college that he's going to just south of Fond du Lac. And then there's a couple from Keele and Plymouth.
That's awesome.
That is great.
It is really cool that it's bringing people together. That, you know, maybe don't have anything, you know, this is their passion and they don't really have anybody to play with, and it's not really an online kind of forum. So it's really cool that people get to come together and do that kind of stuff.
That is cool. You know? Nowadays you don't hear about that, you know,
right.
Although it is clearly happening.
People go to other people's houses, watch Packer games all the time you know, game night with couples and whatnot. But, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, it's another cool option if you're out there and you need something to do.
That's awesome.
Darren will always have you over.
So is there a certain character or anything that like you love being, or are they all just kind of their own?
I try to do something different every time.
Okay.
Sometimes I cast spells as a sorcerer. Sometimes I run around as a thief, and other times I do the fighter thing. It's totally random.
Yeah.
Now, do you prefer to be the dungeon master or a character within the game?
I like both.
Okay.
You can get a little burned out if you're running the game all the time.
Sure.
as the DM, you're not just one character. You're all of them except for the ones that the players are playing, right?
Oh, I suppose.
So
yeah.
If you walk into a bar, I'm the bartender.
Yeah.
If you're fighting a monster, I'm the monster. If you're in a dungeon trying to negotiate with somebody because you've gotten captured and you're in prison, I'm the guy you're negotiating with, right? So I get to play every single role as the DM. Sometimes it's nice to get deep and develop a character and be that character.
Sure.
So on our Sunday night games, we take turns. The three core people that play that game all can DM. So I'll run for 6-8 months a year, and I'll get tired of it, and I'll say, hey, who's next? And then Dennis will jump in and take over for a while, or Howard will jump in and take over for a while.
So I do want to ask, you have a piece of paper in front of you. It looks from the New Yorker, so it's super fancy here.
Yeah, the New Yorker's written a bunch of articles on Dungeons & Dragons over the years, yeah.
So what was so significant that you thought you'd bring it here?
So this one is about how they've used D&D in Brooklyn. So there was a psychologist that had a practice, and he was working with kids. And he decided that he didn't want to kind of do that practice, be a psychologist anymore. So he actually opened up a game store, and he was tying in games to different areas of the brain, and he was helping kids that had problems, cognitive problems or psychological problems, through some of the board games that he was playing with them. So he was tapping into his knowledge of psychology and psychiatry to allow kids to open up, to share a little bit differently than they normally would. And one of the kids went to him and said, we want to play Dungeons and Dragons. And he was like, no, that's not what we do here. We play board games. You know, there's a finite end to a board game that there's not in Dungeons and Dragons.
Gotcha.
And, you know, I know all these board games. And the kids kept pestering him. And finally, he decided to run a game. And what he found was pretty amazing, that kids started to open up. Probably 6 months after the game, one of the kids' moms came to him and said, what are you doing? Because my kid could not read. He could not write. He was dyslexic. And now he's spending hours and hours every night writing up backstories and stories about his character.
That's awesome.
That's
so
amazing.
He's using D&D to engage kids. And there's more information in that New Yorker article that talks about how they're using gaming to have kids open up about abuse that they've suffered. That they wouldn't normally open up about, but when it's your character, right, they're utilizing the game as a way to get kids to open up about things that are happening to them in their real life. So it's kind of a cool turnaround.
Therapeutic almost. Yeah,
right?
That's awesome.
It's the opposite of what it used to be, right? D&D is making kids evil. And
right.
D&D is allowing kids to open up
about
what's happening to them.
That's great.
So
that's awesome.
It's pretty
really
amazing stuff.
Who would have thought, right?
I thought at first when you said, you know, it's tied with Brooklyn, and I was like, well, yeah, Brooklyn was a pretty scary place at one time, you know, but that's amazing.
It's interesting when you look at the history of D&D. Gary Gygax was actually the U.S. military went to Gary Gygax's gaming group to observe to see if they could learn techniques on how to war game against their enemies. So they actually learn from Dungeons & Dragons a little
bit.
Crazy. It's not something that's hugely pop.
I'm sure it's not.
Publicized,
yeah.
But
yeah.
You heard it here, folks.
Yeah.
Breaking news. Is that you have two papers there. Is that that was both of them? Or
yeah, the other one is it's titled Dungeons & Dragons Saved My Life. And it's really about somebody that was troubled, was having a hard time, and had considered suicide. And got into a game group, and a little bit of community really, really helped him, you know, overcome his demons, such as they are, right?
Yeah.
When you look at some of the comments on Critical Role's website, there are hundreds of people that have said, you saved my life.
Wow.
You know, I was in a deep, dark place, and I got started watching your show, and it's made a difference in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of cool to see that. Seeing both sides of that story, right? From when I was a kid, when it was horrible, and you weren't supposed to mess with it because it was, you know, going to turn you into something that would crawl around in the sewers, versus where it's at now, you know.
Wow.
So it's a huge.
That's awesome that, like, you know, people who don't have anything, they latch onto something and it helps them through whatever it is, and whether it be Dungeons & Dragons or whatever. That's awesome.
Well, I think this is a good point in general that, you know, community. All of us human beings, whether we're extroverts or introverts, we do have that longing to be connected to another human being, you know, and to be able to do this in that avenue is great. It's awesome that it's out there.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. It's really cool. I've not had anything like that happen to me, but, you know, who knows someday.
Maybe one of your other game partners, it's happened to them. They just haven't talked about it too much. Who knows? Yeah. That's awesome. Wow. Is this Gary guy still alive?
No, Gary Gygax passed away. Okay. Yeah, he died in the, I think in the 90s.
Okay.
Actually, it's funny because Lake Geneva has put together a, well, not Lake Geneva, but the family put together a thing to build him a statue. And they've been working with Lake Geneva to try to get a statue put up of Gary Gygax.
I'm sure Lake Geneva would love that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
His the gaming store that he had in Lake Geneva is still open. His family's still sort of involved.
Uh-huh.
Wizards of the Coast, which is the company that bought Dungeons & Dragons from TSR, has kind of made it a big deal. They're also the same people that own Magic the Gathering, so most people will know Magic. They own all the licensing for D&D now, but there's some folks that were involved in early on Dungeons & Dragons with Gary Gygax that have come up with some of their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting.
That's awesome.
You know what I love about all these podcasts?
What's that?
Is that whenever I leave a podcast, I don't necessarily do them, but I'm like, I want to try that. You know, after talking to you and other people, I'm like, you make your hobby sound awesome, you know?
it
probably is awesome, but it's one of those things where I never thought about it in the past.
Yeah. You got to be the right person to do it, though.
I'm right? sure.
Not everybody's gonna come to Darren's basement and play D&D and love it.
98%.
Come on.
I'm for sure gonna play for sure. I was disappointed that we didn't get to play before. It just didn't work with our schedule. Now that I know it's Saturday and Sunday nights, more opportunities, man. I'm all about it.
Yeah, sign me up.
The door is always open.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, hopefully if you're out there and you're listening to this and you are interested, I'm sure Darren would love to talk to you about it. Reach out to him through whatever avenue you'd like. He's got a phone, email, whatever it might be. So
yeah, we'll talk about it after work hours.
After work hours. Off the clock.
Yes. Yeah.
As it would be.
Awesome.
Well, that's all I've got.
That's all I've got. All
right, perfect.
Yeah.
All right, Darren. Well, thank you for joining us. As always, we're gonna have you sign us off. So if you do that right now.
This is Darren Poisson, and you've been listening to another episode of Off the Clock, a podcast made the Johnsonville Way.